This is the Cambridge Assessment International Education, Cambridge IGCSE, November 2020 examination in English as a Second Language. Paper 4, Listening. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers. And when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready. Here is the exam. Exercise 1. You will hear 4 short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. Who will the girl visit this evening? B. What kind of film would she like to see on Friday night?
Hi, it's Victoria. I'm really sorry about this, but I'm going to have to cancel our trip to the cinema this evening with you and your cousin. My aunt is in hospital, and I'm going to see how she is with my mum. Please go ahead without me if you want to, but if not, do you fancy going on Friday night instead? I know the comedy film won't still be showing by then, but how about the thriller? It's got your favourite actor in. Can't remember his name. I know you want to see that romance as well, but I'm not really into those. Anyway, call me back. Hi, it's Victoria. I'm really sorry about this, but I'm going to have to cancel our trip to the cinema this evening with you and your cousin. My aunt is in hospital, and I'm going to see how she is with my mum. Please go ahead without me if you want to, but if not, do you fancy going on Friday night instead? I know the comedy film won't still be showing by then, but how about the thriller? It's got your favourite actor in. Can't remember his name. I know you want to see that romance as well, but I'm not really into those. Anyway, call me back.
Question 2. A. Where would the girl prefer to go cycling today? B. What class does the boy have today?
Are you going out with the cycling club this afternoon? They're going on a ride.
To the mountains. I need to improve my fitness, and that will be a great way to do it. It's steep up there, though. I won't be able to keep up. Cycling along the river is more my kind of thing, not as tough. I'll start doing hill climbs on the ride they're planning next week. What about you? I guess you won't be going cycling today. Haven't you got a swimming class?
You mean basketball? I started last month, and I'm going to try tennis soon, too.
Wow, that sounds great.
Are you going out with the cycling club this afternoon? They're going on a ride.
To the mountains. I need to improve my fitness, and that will be a great way to do it. It's steep up there, though. I won't be able to keep up. Cycling along the river is more my kind of thing, not as tough. I'll start doing hill climbs on the ride they're planning next week. What about you? I guess you won't be going cycling today. Haven't you got a swimming class?
You mean basketball? I started last month, and I'm going to try tennis soon too.
Wow, that sounds great.
Question 3. A. What does the shop assistant say about the Saturn phone? B. Why does the woman prefer the crystal phone?
Can I help you, madam?
Oh, yes, please.
I need a new phone and I can't decide between these two. I've heard of the Saturn brand, but I don't know this one. Crystal. Is it a good make?
Absolutely. It's had very good reviews and it's also slightly cheaper. But the best seller is the other one, in fact.
OK, that's interesting. Well, I think I'll go for the Crystal phone as it's more stylish, even though I'm not quite so keen on the colour.
Right. Well, if you'd like to come over to the till, I'll get you one in a box. Can I help you, madam?
Oh, yes, please. I need a new phone and I can't decide between these two. I've heard of the Saturn brand, but I don't know this one. Crystal. Is it a good make?
Absolutely. It's had very good reviews and it's also slightly cheaper. But the best seller is the other one, in fact.
OK, that's interesting. Well, I think I'll go for the Crystal phone as it's more stylish, even though I'm not quite so keen on the colour.
Right. Well, if you'd like to come over to the till, I'll get you one in a box.
Question 4. A. What does the teacher say helps us learn more about geography? B. What will students find out about this week?
In the past, when people wanted to gain an understanding of the world, they would have to spend time looking at books and maps. When the internet came along, it hugely improved our knowledge of geography, in terms of where countries and seas are located. But this isn't all it did. It also gave us the opportunity to find out about the climates, people, and landscapes of the world, too. What we're going to do this week is concentrate not on a physical aspect of geography, but on culture. Each of you will do some research and report back to the class what you found out. In the past, when people wanted to gain an understanding of the world, they would have to spend time looking at books and maps. When the internet came along, it hugely improved our knowledge of geography, in terms of where countries and seas are located. But this isn't all it did. It also gave us the opportunity to find out about the climates, people, and landscapes of the world, too. What we're going to do this week is concentrate not on a physical aspect of geography, but on culture. Each of you will do some research and report back to the class what you found out.
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear exercise 2. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 2. You will hear a student talking about a cruise ship called the MS Symphony of the Seas. Listen to the talk and complete the details below. Write 1 or 2 words or a number in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
My talk today is about the world's largest cruise ship, the MS Symphony of the Seas. I love the idea of working on a cruise ship once I've finished my studies, and I think you'll find this one really amazing. The enormous ship has 18 decks, is 72.5 metres high, and can accommodate a maximum of 7,000 passengers, in addition to its 2,200 crew members. Its gross weight is 228,081 tonnes. That's pretty big. The building of this huge vessel started in 2015, but it wasn't until over a year and a half later, in June 2017, that it was ready to be launched. And it was a further 10 months after that, in 2018, that it finally set sail with passengers on board. When the ship finally left Barcelona, in Spain, it headed off around the Mediterranean Sea. But it only did a few trips there, before moving to the USA, which is now its permanent home. From there, it sails on a regular basis on two routes around the Caribbean, visiting Mexico along the way before going home again. The ship feels very spacious, even when it has got everyone on board. There are 22 restaurants, an amazing 24 swimming pools, and almost 3,000 cabins. It's enormous, and its neighbourhoods, that's the word they use for the zones on board, have different themes, such as the entertainment place and the boardwalk. Each area of the ship has some pretty incredible attractions, and there's lots for passengers to do. There's the aqua theatre, where you can watch high diving performances, and overlooking the theatre is the ship's water slide, the tallest there is on any ship. It's 65 metres long and takes about 13 seconds to go down. There's even what's known as a zip line, a cable you can ride high across the ship on. That looks pretty scary, even to me. There are sports venues and fitness centres on board too, with a wide choice of exercise activities. You can do conventional sports such as basketball and football, but if you've never done surfing before and don't want to do it in the sea, then the sports deck has two purpose-built simulators as well, which look brilliant. There's entertainment in the evenings too, with a few different shows to see at the theatre. One's quite well known. Hairspray, it's called. Maybe you've heard of it. And there's one called Dare to Dream, about flying. And apart from that, at the ice skating rink, there is a show called 1977. There are comedy shows too, and an area called the Youth Zone, where teenagers can hang out on their own, without adults. What I found really interesting about the MS Symphony of the Seas is not just that it has so many things to do, but that it appeals to people from all kinds of backgrounds. There seems to be something for everyone. Apparently, there are more artworks than in the popular Louvre Museum in Paris, as well as over 20,000 plants in an outdoor area known as Central Park. Maybe one day, I'll be working on a ship like this.
Now you will hear the talk again.
My talk today is about the world's largest cruise ship, the MS Symphony of the Seas. I love the idea of working on a cruise ship once I've finished my studies, and I think you'll find this one really amazing. The enormous ship has 18 decks, is 72.5 metres high, and can accommodate a maximum of 7,000 passengers, in addition to its 2,200 crew members. Its gross weight is 228,081 tonnes. That's pretty big. The building of this huge vessel started in 2015, but it wasn't until over a year and a half later, in June 2017, that it was ready to be launched. And it was a further 10 months after that, in 2018, that it finally set sail with passengers on board. When the ship finally left Barcelona, in Spain, it headed off around the Mediterranean Sea. But it only did a few trips there before moving to the USA, which is now its permanent home. From there, it sails on a regular basis on two routes around the Caribbean, visiting Mexico along the way before going home again. The ship feels very spacious, even when it has got everyone on board. There are 22 restaurants, an amazing 24 swimming pools, and almost 3,000 cabins. It's enormous, and its neighbourhoods, that's the word they use for the zones on board, have different themes, such as the entertainment place and the boardwalk. Each area of the ship has some pretty incredible attractions, and there's lots for passengers to do. There's the Aqua Theatre, where you can watch high diving performances. And overlooking the theatre is the ship's water slide, the tallest there is on any ship. It's 65 metres long and takes about 13 seconds to go down. There's even what's known as a zip line, a cable you can ride high across the ship on. That looks pretty scary, even to me. There are sports venues and fitness centres on board too, with a wide choice of exercise activities. You can do conventional sports such as basketball and football, but if you've never done surfing before and don't want to do it in the sea, then the sports deck has two purpose-built simulators as well, which look brilliant. There's entertainment in the evenings too, with a few different shows to see at the theatre. One's quite well known. Hairspray, it's called. Maybe you've heard of it. And there's one called Dare to Dream, about flying. And apart from that, at the ice skating rink, there is a show called 1977. There are comedy shows too, and an area called the Youth Zone, where teenagers can hang out on their own, without adults. What I found really interesting about the MS Symphony of the Seas is not just that it has so many things to do, but that it appeals to people from all kinds of backgrounds. There seems to be something for everyone. Apparently, there are more artworks than in the popular Louvre Museum in Paris, as well as over 20,000 plants in an outdoor area known as Central Park. Maybe one day, I'll be working on a ship like this.
That is the end of the talk. In a moment, you will hear exercise 3. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 3. You will hear 6 people talking about collecting things. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list, A to G, which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the appropriate box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the recordings twice. Speaker 1.
As a kid, my granddad bought me a subscription to my favorite comic. He saw how absorbed I'd get in it, and so he paid for me to receive an issue every week. I never threw any away, so soon built up an impressive collection. Eventually, I outgrew it, but didn't give up the subscription because I'd loved the comic for so long. And I wanted to carry on supporting those who produced it, a small company which printed other interesting stuff. Perhaps my collection will be worth something one day.
Speaker 2.
I collect small figures of film characters. I'm really into science fiction and have all kinds of weird and wonderful monsters and aliens. I write my own science fiction stories and have had one or two published. And although I have to be careful not to let the collection influence me too much, you've got to be original when you're writing, looking at them does get my creativity flowing. Sometimes I lose concentration as I get so lost in my ideas, and I have to bring myself back down to earth.
Speaker 3.
When I was 5, my parents took me to a football match, and since then I've kept every programme from every match I've been to, They're the booklets you get with the players' names and information about them. I find them very motivating, and one day I hope to play for a big club. I've also got a football signed by the team I support. I won the chance to meet them in a competition, and that gave me the opportunity to ask them about improving my game.
Speaker 4.
I make model planes. Maybe that's not exactly the same as collecting, but I keep everything I make and hang the planes from my ceiling as if they're flying around. I've done at least 20 now. I've never been the best at concentrating on something and sticking with it, and my mum thought this would help me. It worked, and I can spend ages building and painting my planes. I don't know much about the physics of flying, and I'm not that interested, but I do love my hobby.
Speaker 5.
When I was a child, I collected a few shells from the beach, and ever since then, my friends and family have been giving me bits and pieces they've come across which they thought I'd like. Nothing's really of any value, but I really love my collection of unusual stones, feathers, and other things. All my friends seem to be as fascinated as I am with my little collection. One of them even wrote an article about it for our school magazine.
Speaker 6.
I remember sitting on my grandma's knee as a child and looking at family photo albums. I was fascinated by all these people from the past who I take after. Perhaps that's why I enjoy learning about things from the past so much. Grandma gave me the albums, and ever since, I've been asking other family members to add to my collection. I spent hours looking at the fascinating clothes the people in the photos are wearing, and I love finding out about what life was like for them.
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
As a kid, my granddad bought me a subscription to my favorite comic. He saw how absorbed I'd get in it, and so he paid for me to receive an issue every week. I never threw any away, so soon built up an impressive collection. Eventually, I outgrew it, but didn't give up the subscription because I'd loved the comic for so long. And I wanted to carry on supporting those who produced it, a small company which printed other interesting stuff. Perhaps my collection will be worth something one day.
Speaker 2.
I collect small figures of film characters. I'm really into science fiction and have all kinds of weird and wonderful monsters and aliens. I write my own science fiction stories and have had one or two published, and although I have to be careful not to let the collection influence me too much, you've got to be original when you're writing, looking at them does get my creativity flowing. Sometimes I lose concentration as I get so lost in my ideas, and I have to bring myself back down to earth.
Speaker 3.
When I was 5, my parents took me to a football match, and since then I've kept every programme from every match I've been to. They're the booklets you get with the players' names and information about them. I find them very motivating, and one day I hope to play for a big club. I've also got a football signed by the team I support. I won the chance to meet them in a competition, and that gave me the opportunity to ask them about improving my game.
Speaker 4.
I make model planes. Maybe that's not exactly the same as collecting, but I keep everything I make and hang the planes from my ceiling as if they're flying around.
I've done at least 20 now. I've never been the best at concentrating on something and sticking with it. And my mum thought this would help me. It worked, and I can spend ages building and painting my planes. I don't know much about the physics of flying, and I'm not that interested, but I do love my hobby.
Speaker 5.
When I was a child, I collected a few shells from the beach, and ever since then, my friends and family have been giving me bits and pieces they've come across which they thought I'd like. Nothing's really of any value, but I really love my collection of unusual stones, feathers, and other things. All my friends seem to be as fascinated as I am with my little collection. One of them even wrote an article about it for our school magazine.
Speaker 6.
I remember sitting on my grandma's knee as a child and looking at family photo albums. I was fascinated by all these people from the past who I take after. Perhaps that's why I enjoy learning about things from the past so much. Grandma gave me the albums, and ever since, I've been asking other family members to add to my collection. I spent hours looking at the fascinating clothes the people in the photos are wearing, and I love finding out about what life was like for them.
That is the end of Exercise 3. In a moment, you will hear Exercise 4. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 4. You will hear an interview with a girl called Gemma Ribeiro about a motorsport she does called Speedway. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
This morning we're with Gemma Ribeiro, who is a Speedway racer. Gemma, what's Speedway and how did you get into it?
Speedway is a kind of motorcycle racing which takes place in a stadium. You do a few laps around the track, which is just dirt. I was never a kid who stayed at home gaming, even though I liked the look of the racing games my brother played. I'd never seen Speedway in real life before I signed up to a club. I just saw a few clips on a web channel and that got me hooked.
What's it like racing on a track like that?
It's completely different to racing on a normal motor racing circuit. You don't have as much control as your tyres don't stick to the ground and you slide around. Sometimes you seem to just go sideways around the whole track rather than straight forwards. That element of not being quite sure what's going to happen next is what makes it so exciting. Once you've fallen, you're out of the race, which is all part of the sport.
You've just competed in your first major championship.
Yes. I started competing quite young. I was never nervous, which is something which has stayed with me. You learn to block out the noise from spectators. Even leading up to the recent competition, I was the same, while other participants were getting anxious about winning. I knew that I was unlikely to at my first big event, though it did bother me that I might not have done as much practice as I could have.
Would you say being a successful racer is more about the bike or the rider?
They work together. Speedway doesn't attract the same money and attention that other motorbike racing does, so the bikes haven't advanced as much since the sport began. Having said that, the engines are high performance and teams try out different engineering techniques to get the most out of them. The bikes all look much the same if you don't know a lot about them. It's the engine that counts, that and how the rider handles it.
Does experience count in becoming successful as a racer?
Of course. But there's more to it than that. Some riders can be quite aggressive, pushing each other out of the way, stuff like that. I prefer to avoid that kind of angry energy to get ahead. It's like anything in life, really. You can still be competitive, but do it in a quieter, more focused kind of way. Both kinds of people win, of course. It's just the style I prefer.
Are there different ways to ride the bike itself?
Yes. When I'm riding, I try to calculate all my moves, ride smoothly and get as much contact as possible with the ground, using my foot to balance when I need to. Keeping the bike upright helps you do that. A lot of people ride around bends so that one handlebar is very close to the ground, and that's when they often fall off. It can be distracting when that happens, but you just have to keep going.
Successful competitors have to travel a lot. How does that affect you?
Well, the championship was the first time I was away from my home country. Many people my age are desperate to be independent, whereas I couldn't have been happier to have my parents with me. Their support has been crucial. I didn't miss out on any fun with people my age, though, and we all got on amazingly well.
Finally, how's the future looking for you?
Great. I guess one day I'll find out whether I'll make it as a professional speedway racer or not. And you never know, I might find that something else appeals to me more. At the moment, I can't imagine giving up racing, even if it never develops into something other than a brilliant hobby.
Now you will hear the interview again.
This morning we're with Gemma Ribeiro, who is a speedway racer. Gemma, what's speedway and how did you get into it?
Speedway is a kind of motorcycle racing which takes place in a stadium. You do a few laps around the track, which is just dirt. I was never a kid who stayed at home gaming, even though I liked the look of the racing games my brother played. I'd never seen speedway in real life before I signed up to a club. I just saw a few clips on a web channel, and that got me hooked.
What's it like racing on a track like that?
It's completely different to racing on a normal motor racing circuit. You don't have as much control, as your tyres don't stick to the ground, and you slide around. Sometimes you seem to just go sideways around the whole track, rather than straight forwards. That element of not being quite sure what's going to happen next is what makes it so exciting. Once you've fallen, you're out of the race, which is all part of the sport.
You've just competed in your first major championship.
Yes. I started competing quite young. I was never nervous, which is something which has stayed with me. You learn to block out the noise from spectators. Even leading up to the recent competition, I was the same, while other participants were getting anxious about winning. I knew that I was unlikely to at my first big event, though it did bother me that I might not have done as much practice as I could have.
Would you say being a successful racer is more about the bike or the rider?
They work together. Speedway doesn't attract the same money and attention that other motorbike racing does, so the bikes haven't advanced as much since the sport began. Having said that, the engines are high performance and teams try out different engineering techniques to get the most out of them. The bikes all look much the same if you don't know a lot about them. It's the engine that counts. That and how the rider handles it.
Does experience count in becoming successful as a racer?
Of course. But there's more to it than that. Some riders can be quite aggressive, pushing each other out of the way, stuff like that. I prefer to avoid that kind of angry energy to get ahead. It's like anything in life, really. You can still be competitive, but do it in a quieter, more focused kind of way. Both kinds of people win, of course. It's just the style I prefer.
Are there different ways to ride the bike itself?
Yes. When I'm riding, I try to calculate all my moves, ride smoothly and get as much contact as possible with the ground, using my foot to balance when I need to. Keeping the bike upright helps you do that. A lot of people ride around bends so that one handlebar is very close to the ground, and that's when they often fall off. It can be distracting when that happens, but you just have to keep going.
Successful competitors have to travel a lot. How does that affect you?
Well, the championship was the first time I was away from my home country. Many people my age are desperate to be independent, whereas I couldn't have been happier to have my parents with me. Their support has been crucial. I didn't miss out on any fun with people my age, though, and we all got on amazingly well.
Finally, how's the future looking for you?
Great. I guess one day I'll find out whether I'll make it as a professional speedway racer or not. And you never know, I might find that something else appeals to me more. At the moment, I can't imagine giving up racing, even if it never develops into something other than a brilliant hobby.
That is the end of the interview. In a moment, you will hear exercise 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 5, Part A. You will hear a jeweller giving a talk about the study of precious stones. Listen to the talk and complete the notes in Part A. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Good morning, everyone. I'm here today to talk to you about one aspect of my work. The study of precious stones such as diamonds and emeralds. So why is this important? Part of my job involves assessing what a precious stone is worth. For a few customers, this is because they wish to put their items up for sale. However, the majority need to know so they can organise insurance for the jewellery. As there are many artificial stones around, it's important to determine whether a sample is natural or not, and jewellers have to carry out various tests in order to do this. These tests are quite technical, but I'm going to try and explain them as best I can. One test measures how light passes through a precious stone at different angles. Jewellers look for what they call the critical angle, which each type of precious stone has. Some stones lose light from their sides, whereas others reflect it back into the centre. Understanding this is key to determining whether a stone is genuine or not. Another test focuses on the stone's structure. Jewellers can work out what a stone is by looking at how dense it is. The test, which involves using air and liquids, enables jewellers to work this out. How hard a stone is also something that might be considered when attempting to identify it, though this is tested by other means. A further method used in the identification process is looking at colour. Specifically, how white light is separated into its different component colours as it passes through a stone. Each stone does this in a different way. Such analysis can aid jewellers in determining the origin of the stone. For example, precious stones called rubies from Australia are slightly different in colour from those found in Thailand. Finally, there is a growing interest in other types of less precious stones which are not expensive, but are believed to provide particular benefits. While some are thought to improve your mood, others develop your strength. The stone Larimer is proving quite popular at the moment because of the positive effects on health it is believed to have. Some customers have the stone set in a ring or even a necklace.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Good morning, everyone. I'm here today to talk to you about one aspect of my work, the study of precious stones such as diamonds and emeralds. So why is this important? Part of my job involves assessing what a precious stone is worth. For a few customers, this is because they wish to put their items up for sale. However, the majority need to know so they can organise insurance for the jewellery. As there are many artificial stones around, it's important to determine whether a sample is natural or not, and jewellers have to carry out various tests in order to do this. These tests are quite technical, but I'm going to try and explain them as best I can. One test measures how light passes through a precious stone at different angles. Jewellers look for what they call the critical angle, which each type of precious stone has. Some stones lose light from their sides, whereas others reflect it back into the centre. Understanding this is key to determining whether a stone is genuine or not. Another test focuses on the stone's structure. Jewellers can work out what a stone is by looking at how dense it is. The test, which involves using air and liquids, enables jewellers to work this out. How hard a stone is also something that might be considered when attempting to identify it, though this is tested by other means. A further method used in the identification process is looking at colour. Specifically, how white light is separated into its different component colours as it passes through a stone. Each stone does this in a different way. Such analysis can aid jewellers in determining the origin of the stone. For example, precious stones called rubies from Australia are slightly different in colour from those found in Thailand. Finally, there is a growing interest in other types of less precious stones which are not expensive, but are believed to provide particular benefits. While some are thought to improve your mood, others develop your strength. The stone Larimer is proving quite popular at the moment because of the positive effects on health it is believed to have. Some customers have the stone set in a ring or even a necklace.
Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two students about a jewellery making course and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
I think jewellery's fascinating, don't you? I love that talk on identifying precious stones.
I know. I'm going to sign up for that jewellery making course we were thinking about.
Yeah, so am I. I was finding out more about it the other day. You do it all online, which means going at your own pace and studying in your free time.
That sounds good. We can fit it around other stuff we're doing.
Exactly. The site says we'll have to provide the course books we'll be using ourselves. We should receive the tools because they're included in the fee, as is access to all the online videos that show us what to do in each module.
Great. We'll feel like real jewellers by the end of the course. Don't you need some previous experience to join, though?
Well, it's for beginners like you and me, so qualifications or knowledge aren't necessary. Just passion. That's what the site says anyway.
Well, we've certainly got that. So what will we be producing on the course?
Let's see. Loads of different types of jewellery. Look, here's a picture of some cool earrings made from glass beads. I hope we get to do something like that.
They look fantastic. I'm not sure I'd want to create anything as old-fashioned looking as those, though. The metal wire bracelet is more my kind of thing.
Imagine being able to create that. It'd make a great present for my mum.
Yeah, right. I'm just looking at the website again. Oh, that's interesting. As part of the course, we'll also have to send a piece of jewellery to the teacher. I've got an idea for it already. I'd like to create something to do with space travel. What do you think?
Great idea. The only thing is it says here that we're given the topic and for us it's going to be nature conservation, which sounds pretty interesting.
Hmm. Okay. I guess so. And it says here that not everything on the course is done online. There are opportunities to visit a number of places to learn more too. This jewellery workshop looks like it'd be worth going to.
Won't we learn everything they do at it during the course though? I think the trade fair would be really useful for making contacts. You know, for when we're eventually looking for work.
I hadn't thought of that. Good idea.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
I think jewellery's fascinating, don't you? I love that talk on identifying precious stones.
I know. I'm going to sign up for that jewellery making course we were thinking about.
Yeah, so am I. I was finding out more about it the other day. You do it all online, which means going at your own pace and studying in your free time.
That sounds good. We can fit it around other stuff we're doing.
Exactly. The site says we'll have to provide the course books we'll be using ourselves. We should receive the tools because they're included in the fee, as is access to all the online videos that show us what to do in each module.
Great. We'll feel like real jewellers by the end of the course. Don't you need some previous experience to join, though?
Well, it's for beginners like you and me, so qualifications or knowledge aren't necessary. Just passion. That's what the site says anyway.
Well, we've certainly got that. So, what will we be producing on the course?
Let's see. Loads of different types of jewellery. Look, here's a picture of some cool earrings made from glass beads. I hope we get to do something like that.
They look fantastic. I'm not sure I'd want to create anything as old-fashioned looking as those, though. The metal wire bracelet is more my kind of thing.
Imagine being able to create that. It'd make a great present for my mum.
Yeah, right. I'm just looking at the website again. Oh, that's interesting. As part of the course, we'll also have to send a piece of jewellery to the teacher. I've got an idea for it already. I'd like to create something to do with space travel. What do you think?
Great idea. The only thing is it says here that we're given the topic and for us it's going to be nature conservation, which sounds pretty interesting.
Okay, I guess so. And it says here that not everything on the course is done online. There are opportunities to visit a number of places to learn more too. This jewellery workshop looks like it'd be worth going to.
Won't we learn everything they do at it during the course though? I think the trade fair would be really useful for making contacts. You know, for when we're eventually looking for work.
I hadn't thought of that. Good idea.
That is the end of exercise 5 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.